They're back at the K tonight. The Guardians in town. Someone that I know is fired up for a little full ride on Saturday night is Jake Eisenberg. I'm sure that's what you're looking forward to the most this entire weekend.
Oh yeah. Those were the jams of my middle school years. I can't wait for some flow rider.
Yeah, we were discussing the
You're going to get low, I hope, man.
Yeah. Well, honestly, one of the highlights from this weekend for me was getting HUD to read the Flo Rida promo on the TV side. And even better, they got Denny to read the Flo Rida promo on the radio side. And that clip is gold.
What does Denny listen to? Do you know by chance? I doubt it's Flo Rida. That's, I guess, why I'm asking. But then part of me hopes that he's just been like bumping Kendrick all summer and we had no idea.
You know, that's a good question. I ought to ask him today.
Okay, I'm curious.
Yeah, we'll
I want you to find out for us because now I'm very curious.
Yeah, it's something
I'll report back.
Now, you were just in Chicago. Obviously, Wrigley, especially a day game at Wrigley on a Wednesday is like the most, I think, incredible scene for baseball. And Denny also made the trip too, which I thought was neat.
Yeah, I know. That was really, really cool. I mean, it's special when Denny comes on the road because that doesn't happen all that often at this point. But he comes to St. Louis. He was going to come to Chicago a couple of years ago and then didn't. And it was cool to see him at Wrigley Field this time around. And Ian Crapp, you might have seen, put out some really cool notes. He had talked to Denny about the times that he had been to Wrigley. And Denny told a story about, you know, how his grandma took him to a game when he was just 5 years old at Wrigley. And they tried to and Ian figured out exactly which game it was. I mean, there's so much history at that ballpark. And then when you line that up with somebody who has been there for the majority of the ballpark's existence and grew up around it, I mean, that's just a really cool thing.
When you start looking at the series this weekend, we understand the trade deadline is less than a week away and that the Royals have been hovering in this a couple of games below 500 mark for a while now. If like I heard Vinny say, and I guess this is like, do you view it the same way? Vinny's like, we got to make the decision on guys like Lugo hard. Making it hard would be sweeping the Guardians, but at the very least, winning this series is very important if you want to show ownership how serious you are about being a playoff contender this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's interesting, there's a couple of schedule things that I found interesting. And look, every game means the same wins and losses, but the ones, you know, leading up to the deadline on Thursday are certainly magnified to a degree because it can more or less determine the course of, you know, what you do in the second half. I mean, look at the Diamondbacks. They just lost three in a row, and now they've traded Josh Naylor. They're likely going to trade Eugenio Suarez. And right now the Diamondbacks have the same record as the Royals do. I would say the big difference between the two is the Diamondbacks have a lot of expiring contracts, and it's not as if they have the same kind of contention window or the same kind of jumping off point that the Royals do over the next couple of years, at least in my opinion. You know, the Royals are in a place where they have a really solid, controllable core. And if it's not this year, it is going to be next year, the year after that. Like this is a longer contention window. And so you kind of have to factor that in as well. And I think when you look at the schedule that the Royals have played in July, well, first of all, the Royals have been a really good team in July, certainly better than June, even though that was not the highest bar to set. But the Royals are 11-7 in July, four games above 500. That's what you wanted to see. They have played a lot of National League teams this month. In fact, this series with the Guardians is the first series against an American League team in a while. So the Royals haven't had a chance to directly improve their standing in either the division or the wild card for the better part of this month. They have a chance to do that this weekend. And so, yeah, these three games are certainly crucial when it comes to the American League Central and the wild card. I just think it's interesting that when you look at the wild card standings too, that right now the Royals are right behind the Guardians. They're behind the Rangers and the Rays. The Red Sox have the third wild card position. These are all teams that the Royals have a lot of games left against, with the exception of the Rays. You know, the Royals split the season series with the Rays, but you're still going to see Boston three more times. You're going to see Texas four more times. You're going to see Cleveland seven more times. You've got the Twins and the Angels kind of right behind you. Haven't seen the Angels at all yet this season. You've still got some games against the Mariners coming up at a certain point. You haven't seen the Blue Jays at all. They're a first-place team, so it is kind of right in front of you. Like the Royals do control their own destiny to a pretty strong degree at this point in the season. Not that that's all that different from other teams. I just think it makes it a really interesting and difficult decision, and I'm glad I'm not the one that has to do it.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. Of course, the Royals taking on the Guardians starting tonight out at Kauffman Stadium. A player that has been part of, obviously, the recent success, or at least better play, someone that would have to be part of the equation if this team were to get hot down the stretch. That's, of course, Salvador Perez. There were fair conversations, I think, happening weeks ago, months ago, about Salvador Perez and age and father time and everything. And then here he is now, and he's playing as good as any baseball player at the plate, period.
Yeah, and I'll say this. Before I got to Kansas City, maybe 2022, my second year in Omaha, that's when I first started to really understand, you know, the conversations around Salvador Perez a little bit more, like the Hall of Fame conversations, because from afar, you don't really get it until you see it every single day. And he was just coming off this incredible 2021 season with 48 homers and 121 RBIs. And so the numbers in 2022 were always going to be a step down from that. But then when I got here in 2023, the conversation was kind of similar to the conversation we're having now. It's like, oh, Salvi's getting older, and how long can he keep doing this? And is it time to move on? And should he be traded? That was a big conversation in 2023. And then he goes out and has an incredible 2024 season. And then he starts slow this year, and now he's picking it back up, and he's unstoppable again. And here's the thing that I've learned. We can say that Salvador Perez is getting older and older, and father time is undefeated. And I'm not going to believe that anymore when it comes to Salvador Perez, because he has proven time and time again that that does not apply to him in the way that we think that it should. And so until there is an actual finality to it, I'm just going to believe that Salvador Perez is going to keep doing what Salvador Perez is doing for all baseball eternity. He's got a really good shot at getting to 300 career homers this year, especially after hitting, what now, 5 homers in his last 5 games and 7 since the All-Star break or something like that, or 9 in the month of July. I mean, it's been unreal.
To be clear, I don't want Salvador Perez to go anywhere, but because we know those conversations in 2023 were real, like JJ had mentioned it, one of the best decisions he said, we're not making those deals. Do you think there are teams that try again on Salvi this year, just knowing the Royals are kind of stuck in no man's land? Like, hey, you know, you guys got lots of good young catchers. You know, is Salvi available? I don't think they trade him. It just feels like a call teams make.
I think that there are teams that are going to make a call, and I think that's going to get a little bit of a chuckle from the Royals front office. And I think it's going to be one of those like tongue-in-cheek questions from other front offices. It's like, you know, hey, while we're talking about Seth Lugo, by the way, like, Salvador Perez, like, what do you think? And I think the answer is going to be like, ha-ha, very funny. Let's go back to talking about something real.
I think that's probably fair. That's probably a very fair way to put it. As far as the pitching staff right now, we know there's a ton up in the air depending on what happens at the trade deadline. But Cole Reagan's middle of August maybe is his timeline. Michael Lorenzen, I guess, could come back from the IL here fairly soon. We know Rich Hill made a start the other night, and Cody and I were saying, look, it wasn't Rich Hill's fault that, and that was just defense, and a lot of things were letting him down. What do you make of just the depth, or I guess kind of lack of depth at this point in time with the rotation?
Yeah, it's been one of the kind of under the radar surprising things, because you were expecting to have Alec Marsh as some really solid starting pitching depth. Kyle Wright was expected to be part of some really solid pitching depth. Marsh has not thrown a competitive pitch this season with a shoulder impingement. Kyle Wright, you know, was on his way back in his rehab appearances, was in AAA stretching out, and then had an oblique injury. He's still on the injured list. I believe Luinder Avila, who at one point might have been considered for a spot start, is either still on the injured list or just recently came back from the injured list. Forgive me, I'm not 100% sure on that one. The point is that the Royals entered the season with some really strong starting pitching depth, and it kind of sort of disappeared quickly. You know, Reagans and Lugo went on the injured list at the same time. Noah Cameron has been a godsend, and I really don't think we're talking enough about what Noah Cameron has been to this team and across baseball. I mean, where would the Royals be right now without Noah Cameron and what he's done? And the fact that he is not more strongly in rookie of the year conversations is bewildering to me.
Agreed.
Where the Royals starting pitching looks right now, it is still the strength of this team. And Rich Hill was pretty solid the other night. And I agreed with Hub that if the Royals need Rich Hill to make another start, he certainly earned the ability to make another start. We'll see if Michael Lorenzen comes back. I don't think in this series, but maybe in the Braves series. We'll probably find out some more today. But the truth is, if the Royals are going to make a postseason push, whether it's for more likely a wild card spot or even for the division, if the Tigers keep, you know, faltering, they're 1-9 in their last 10. If they're going to make a push, it's because the Royals have the strong starting pitching they did that year, last year. And that includes Seth Lugo. That includes Michael Wacha. That includes all-star Chris Bubich. That includes rookie of the year candidate Noah Cameron. And the X factor, like we talked about last week, is Cole Ragans. If Cole Ragans comes back in mid to late August, as is expected, and is Cole Ragans, that is a huge deal for a Royals team that's going to get 4-5 starts from a guy who was top five in Cy Young last year and can win you games.
Going back to the Noah Cameron stuff, what do you think it is? Why do you think he's not being included in it? My guess is that it's two things. I think one, the market stuff hurts, as in like people didn't know who he was before the season. He wasn't talked about, players like Roman Anthony coming out of these, so he didn't get the buzz. And then the second thing is, I actually think it might be a bias based on being a boring pitcher, if that makes sense. He doesn't throw 102 miles an hour like Mizorowski. It's a stuff bias in a way.
I think he's been the second or
third best rookie. I don't know.
I think you nailed it. I mean, Noah Cameron was not a top 100 prospect. And as a result, by the way, even if he finishes in the top three of rookie of the year, the Royals would not get the prospect promotion incentive pick, not only because Noah Cameron was not a top 100 prospect, but he also was not on the opening day roster. That being said, it would still be a tremendous accomplishment and something that Cameron deserves to be more squarely in the conversation of. No, Cody, I think you nailed it. I think it's that he wasn't a top 100 prospect, and he doesn't throw 95, 97, 102 miles an hour like Jacob Mizorowski. But all Noah Cameron has done is taken the ball and given you quality starts, maybe not in definition, but in explanation. I mean, he does have 7 quality starts in his 13 outings, but even the ones that haven't been quality starts, you know, like Monday, you know, gives up 4 runs in the second inning. And I think you'd see a lot of rookie pitchers kind of fold after that. But Noah Cameron this entire season has carried himself so far beyond his baseball years. You know, he made a serious in-game adjustment clearly and was solid the rest of the way, kept the Royals in the game, and they go on to win 12-4 with 11 unanswered runs. I mean, how many times this season have we seen the Royals, you know, get down by 3 runs or 2 runs or even a run early in the game and not be able to come back? But they are able to come back because Noah Cameron kept them in the game, gave them length that helped save the bullpen that they would need for the next day, depending upon what Rich Hill would do. I mean, Noah Cameron has been incredible. And again, I repeat, like, where would the Royals be without Noah Cameron this year? I think that the answer to that question, which can't be truly quantified, I think says it all.
Jake Eisenberg will be listening throughout the weekend out at Kauffman Stadium right here on 96.5 The Fan, and we'll be out there Sunday, so maybe we'll see you there.
Awesome. You'll see Noah Cameron, too. He's lined up for
Sunday. Perfect.